My name is Jeff Lumpkin. I'm a finance director at Microsoft. I work in Redmond. I've been at Microsoft for 15 years. I've worked in Redmond. I spent 2 years in Singapore, as well as 5 years in Munich, Germany. 2 years ago, I moved back from Munich to Redmond, and I took up my current role, which is working in our services business, supporting the VP of sales. So I use BI to understand how we're doing, selling our consulting and premier offerings. And more and more, I use BI every single day. And I look at our business through the filter of our BI tools. It's really kind of become a passion and a fascination for me. And I really started my last year in Germany when I'd done pretty much the same role for all 5 years and could do the job in my sleep. So that gave me time to learn about data and how to shape data and join data. And it was a big jump for me because I'm not a technical guy. I'm really confused by you know, technical things. So understanding, for instance, a one-to-many relationship and how to create that within a data set and join different tables, it took me a long time to internalize. But having done that, it opened up a whole new world for me in terms of understanding, being able to bring different perspectives of our business to life by joining sales data, pipeline data, revenue data, personnel data, product data, put it all together in a single cube. I can bring perspective that no one else in finance can. And so professionally, it's been a big boon for me, but also it's been very useful for Microsoft. So now I probably spend a quarter of my time presenting to customers. So Microsoft account managers bring clients to the Redmond campus. They spend 2 to 3 days meeting with different experts on various aspects of what Microsoft produces, and then come away with a different understanding of how they can use Microsoft products in their own businesses. So I present on BI to customers, and I really love it. It's tons of fun for me, either you know small groups of just 2 to 3 people up to 12 or 15. So a group of this size is kind of the top end of what I presented to before. And usually I think I'd be really nervous. However, I landed 6 hours ago, having flown in directly from Seattle. So I think I'm too exhausted to really be nervous right now. 36 hours ago, I was on a sailboat in the middle of Puget Sound, celebrating my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And then my wife drove me to a ferry and then to an airplane, and then I'm here. So I just have a few slides today, and then the rest will be demonstrations. Some of it will be kind of off-the-cuff stuff, and some of it will be actual applications that I use in my work. I'm really happy to be in New Zealand. So I've probably presented 4 times to New Zealand customers at the EBC, the Executive Briefing Center. But my first experience in New Zealand was in 1990, when this was the second stop on a around-the-world backpacking trip. And for the older people in the audience, it was an epic trip. We bought a 25-year-old Hillman Avenger. And so I think older people from New Zealand know what that is, but younger people don't. But it was a piece of crap. And we drove it all the way to the South Island, to Queenstown, and then we went and did the Rootburn Trek. We got to the far side of the Rootburn Trek, which is 20 miles or so, and realized that everyone had left the money, left our wallets in the car, except for one guy. So we only had enough money for the bus for 3 of the 4 of us. So I ran all the way back through the Rootburn Trek, got to my car, and there was a note on the window that said, "It smells like gas. I think you have a leak." And sure enough, the gas tank had sprung a hole. So I hitchhiked, this couple picked me up, maybe in their 70s or 80s, very nice and urbane. And I got in the car and I just reeked after a 20-mile run and 3 days of no shower. And they just shied away from me, like I was a beast. But I was trying to be as polite as possible. So they dropped me at a sheep station. And the woman running that gave me a 5-gallon jug of gas and said, "Okay, walk back, and on your way over, you can drop it off." And I just begged her to drive me back to my car. So she did. I drove back to Queenstown. We got a patch. We patched it and left to come back to Auckland. And it started leaking. So then we stopped at a gas station. They put it up on a lift, pulled off the gas tank, soldered it, put the gas tank back on, and within 50 miles, it was leaking again. So one of my buddies had heard that you could rub soap over the hole, and the soap would form some kind of chemical bond with the gasoline. So we tried that, and sure enough, it worked. So we could drive an hour and a half at a time, and then soap, and then drive more. And the guy that we bought that car from in Auckland, his name was Cal Worthington. And so he sold used cars. And so he said, we bought it for $900, and he said he would buy it back for $600. So the day we went to turn it back, we probably put half a bar of soap over that hole, drove down, got the $600 check, and ran to the airport, ran to the bank, cashed the check, and then ran to the airport and went to Australia. But since that time, I really have had a great fondness for New Zealand, so I'm really happy to be here today. Please, I'd like this to be very interactive, so if you have questions in the middle, go ahead and interrupt me. We can just have a discussion. What I'd like you to think about is, as I show you what I do to display our products to our customers, think how you could do the same thing or make the same thing work for your customers. And if something pops into your head, feel free to interrupt me and we'll have a conversation about it. Okay? So my next slide. That's not impressive. Okay, so this is my family's vineyard in the state of Oregon, which is about 4 hours south of Seattle. And I actually left Microsoft in 2006, and I spent 2 years living on this vineyard with my wife and two kids. And it was a fantastic experience. So this is maybe 60 hectares of land with 17 hectares of fruit planted. And each year we pull off around 80 to 100 tons of fruit and sell that. And so I managed this vineyard, and then I managed a winery. In the upper left, is the pointer working? Which one's the pointer? Red one at the top. Okay, not working for me. In the upper left, we planted Riesling. And the reason we planted Riesling is my father had spent 2 years in Germany in 1960 and 61, and his first exposure to wine was drinking Riesling from the Mosel and Rhone River. So he had this romantic attachment to Riesling, and we planted it up there. The two lines that you see are the price per ton for Pinot Noir and the price per ton for Riesling. You can see that the price for Riesling is well below that compared to well below Pinot Noir's price, and that it increased much more slowly than did the price of Pinot Noir. This is reflected in our profitability. So we do everything by hand in this vineyard, and the cost to harvest a ton of Riesling is exactly the same as a ton of Pinot Noir. So we were losing money on the Riesling, whether we sold it as fruit or whether we made it into wine. We lost money on it. So we made the painful decision to rip out that Riesling and plant Pinot Noir in its place. That cost us about $60,000 and took us out of production for 2 years for that hectare and a half parcel. So it was a really expensive decision that we made to plant Riesling in the first place. If I'd seen this graph before we planted, I would have had a tough conversation with my father and said, I understand this attachment that you have towards Riesling, but it won't do us any good as an economic entity. And my point is this, that I work for Microsoft, one of the biggest companies in the world, which absolutely depends on BI, but BI is just as important for a tiny little entity like this vineyard. And it has applications in all facets of business, but also in all facets of life. So if you come to my presentation tomorrow, I will use Power Map to show how I bought a house after moving back from Germany to Seattle. It's quite an exciting story. It doesn't sound like it, but it actually is. So if you're free then, please come and see that. This is kind of a timeline of when I started at Microsoft up through the present, and the progression that Microsoft Finance has made to become a data-driven organization. So when I first started, my job was to, in Excel, make graphs of various aspects of business performance and paste them into PowerPoint decks. And so I'd create 75, 100-page decks. We had a team of us doing this. We were all freshly graduated MBAs and excited to, you know, go out and change the world with our new education, and instead we were copying and pasting into PowerPoint. So it really wasn't fun. And we'd sit down in these meetings, and I was the guy that sat in the back in the chair, that, you know, the nerd with the computer. I would listen to arguments from business leaders about the numbers. So instead of talking about what business performance was, the guy from France would pull out his own deck, and he'd say, this number is the right number, it's better than your number. And we would have arguments about the numbers and whose number was right, instead of about the business and how we drive the business better. And that was because we did not have a single master data source and a single taxonomy or way of talking about our information, our data. So the first thing we did was called One Finance. And we worked to outsource all of our most basic work, so all the journal entries, AR, AP, payroll, et cetera, we outsource to Accenture. So now we have about 1,000 heads around the world doing all that basic work for us. We also took over controls and compliance, because controls and compliance, to have a strong controls and compliance regime, you need strong underlying data. So it was important that finance took control of that. The next thing we did was core finance. So this was the single master data source and consistent taxonomies. And having done that, we for the most part, have eliminated the discussions about whose number is the right number. You know, as we move into new businesses, if, for instance, if we're talking about seats in Azure, we're still working on the metrics and the measurement and the data storage. So those arguments persist if we move into new business areas. But for established business, there's virtually no disagreement about whose number is the right number. And that's been an incredible source of productivity for us. We've gained tremendous productivity because of that. In 2010, we introduced the first BI tools. So those were Power Pivot and Power View. And they became part of Excel. And I remember the first time I saw Power Pivot, I was really mystified by it because we didn't have a good rollout system. So I didn't know what it was. But essentially, Power Pivot is just SQL inside Excel. And it scared me because it was, when you start talking about SQL, that's technological. And like I said, I'm not technological. And so I was scared by it. And that extra year in Germany gave me the chance to kind of accustom myself to the idea of I could do something like what a SQL guy does. And what we're working on now in Microsoft is how do we make the vast majority of our finance employees as comfortable as I am in using these tools? And it is a question of organizational change. It's how do you take 2,000 people and get them to switch or expand their skill sets? And you know, as in any endeavor, there are early adopters and leads. You bring the majority with you, and then there are always those at the tail that won't make it. And you have to make a decision. Do we keep them in jobs that don't require use of these skills and understanding of this technology, or should they be encouraged to find roles elsewhere? But it's really a big part of how we think is how do we bring all these finance people with us and get them using these tools in a productive way? Any questions? Okay. So I won't read everything, but what I do want to focus on is this graphic at the right, which is discipline at the core and flexibility at the edge. And what that means is that we have a single master data source, we have that data managed by IT, so that's standard corporate BI, and consistent taxonomies. So IT owns this and provides the platform for users at the edge to make use of the data in a consistent but liberating way. So I can tap into that underlying data and produce my own analytics with the knowledge that the taxonomies are consistent, the formulas are consistent, the structure of the data itself is consistent with the proper definition. And so we work very hard to maintain this discipline at the core and make sure that data that is used by finance in a flexible way adheres to the proper definition so that we're not straying away from taxonomies and proper usage. Questions here? Okay. So that was my second to last slide, and this is my last slide. So we at Microsoft use American Express to book all our travel. So every subsidiary around the world uses American Express, and they capture about 80 bits of information for each trip. So if you just think about a structure of a data table, there would be 80 columns of that table. They had 3 years worth of data that we requested, so we had 1.2 million rows of data, 80 columns wide. We got that data, and we created this template here. So this is a PowerPoint template, and we sent this out to the subsidiaries, and we said, fill out this template, send it back to us, and we'll understand how each sub is using its travel money. What came back was 1,250 slides. So a stack of slides that tall, as hard to wade through and understand as if we were just looking at the raw data itself. So my first manager at Microsoft, he's a guy named Mark Regera, and if you go on to YouTube and you look for search for him, it's R-E-G. E-U-R-A. He has probably 30 videos on using BI tools. He's a fantastic guy, so I encourage you to look him up. He said, give me 2 weeks with this data, access to travel experts at Microsoft and database guys at American Express, and I will produce a single slide, one slide that we can use to analyze travel all around the world. And so that's what he did. So this is a PowerView slide, but it's in PowerPoint. And hang on. So I'm going to press that interact button. Sorry. So I press that interact button, and it is establishing a relationship with that 1.2 million row database on a server in Redmond. So because we're far away, it takes a while to establish that relationship, but here it is. Okay, so let me explain the structure of this. On top is total airfare cost over 3 years. This is for France. So this is real data for France from 2010 to 2012. Below total airfare cost is cost per trip times the number of trips. Below cost per trip, you have miles per trip times cost per mile, and that equals cost per trips. And then there are four other graphics which are drivers of cost. So what Mark took 2 weeks to do was to understand the structure of the data and figure out which drivers influence cost the most. And so he came up with domestic versus international, number of days in which the ticket was bought prior to the actual trip, coach versus business, and the trip purpose. So trip purpose, we have four different types: external, meaning visiting customers; internal, visiting another Microsoft office; trade shows, such as this; or training. So you have to pick among those four. So if we look at France, and so now I'll put on my controller hat, my finance controller hat, I'll say that France airfare cost increased by 10% from 3.1 million to 3.4 million over a single year. If you look at this time period, this was the middle of the recession, right? When economies were hurting all around the world, companies were hurting all around the world. So to see a 10% increase in travel cost is concerning, just from a controller standpoint, because unfortunately, France revenue was not growing at 10%. So if you're cost is growing more slowly than your revenue, you see a degradation in margins. One of the things we tried to do was in order to reduce travel costs, was to encourage the reduction in internal travel by greater use of tools like Link, Skype, SharePoint, etc. So if we come down here and isolate internal, now we're only going to be looking at travel data related to internal costs. And so France actually did a really good job in reducing their internal travel from 1.6 million to 0.74 million. So a 50% reduction in total airfare cost. It came partly through a reduction in cost per trip, but primarily the number of trips went from 3,000 to 1,800. So they were fantastic at reducing the number of internal travel trips. That was really great. The growth, the 10% growth came from external trips. And here you see a 60% increase in external trips from, or external dollars from 1 million to 1.6, and a more than doubling of the number of trips. So that means that salespeople from France were out in front of customers twice as often as they had been previously in 2010. And so, again, as a controller, to me that's a good thing, because there should be an ROI associated with being out and visiting customers. And if there's not, then we have a problem. So the next step is for the France controller to try and establish a relationship between trips and revenue. And that's something that can be done. I haven't done it for this, but it's certainly, you know, kind of the next step in this evolution. Now coming down, let's take a look at cost per mile. So it's 44 cents to 35 cents. One of the biggest influences in cost per mile is the number of days in which the trip was booked prior to the departure date. So if we look at 0 to 6 days, you can see the price jumps to 70 cents, 63, and then there was a reduction, so 63 cents at the end, contrasted with over 21 days at 20 cents. So 20 cents is one-third of 63 cents. And if I wish to change behavior as a controller, if I want to reduce the travel costs in France, I have two approaches I can take. I can say to the general manager of France, cut your costs, 10%, I'm cutting your costs, that's it. Or I can say, you're three times more effective as a business leader if you get your people to book further in advance. Your travel dollars go three times farther. And because I can provide him that understanding and do it in such a live way, I give him that understanding and that motivation to do it. And so what it means is that finance and the business, we have a much more congenial and cooperative relationship if I can use data in this live and interactive way. So it's really changed the way that finance works with business partners. Any questions? All right. Then I will leave this one. And has everyone seen these tools before? You guys are all familiar with them? Understand how they work? Show of hands if you've not seen this type of stuff before. Two people, okay. Well, I have this file that's sales dashboard, and this file was used during a review at the end of 2012 between leaders of Western European subsidiaries and the corporate VP in Redmond for EPG. That's Microsoft's Enterprise Productivity Group. So all these guys and ladies came in from Western Europe for their annual review at the beginning of 2013, looking back at 2012. I'm going to recreate for you the PowerView sheet that was used in that review. So here is the very simple Power Pivot Cube that was created from that. So here's the main data table. These are dimension tables around it. Oh, shit. I'm sorry. Okay, have it now? Yes. Okay, so here's a very simple data table. Data pole is the main data table, and then three dimension tables. So these form the cube. I want to explain the pricing level table to you. So in pricing level, we have three kind of super categories: new, recurring, and renewal. So new is when you have a new customer and you sign a deal with them. That's a new customer. Renewal is at the end of a three-year enterprise agreement, you get a re-signature. So that's renewing that agreement. And then recurring is the recognition every year of that three-year agreement. So when a country GM is measured on total revenue, but they're also measured on new business, because you always, any company needs to bring in new customers to survive. So new business is really important to us. So now I'm going to go back into Excel, and then create this power view. And when I first started doing this presentation, I was timing myself here to see how fast I could be. Okay, so over here are those four tables. And so I'm just going to bring in some numbers. So we have actual budget, variance to budget, and variance to budget percentage. And now I'll bring in some filters. So two worldwide areas, antique area 1 and 2. I'm going to select 1. Fiscal year will be 12. And then product is business group 2, and I'm going to select all, and then take out IEB and MPN. Okay, and then this 980 that you see in actual, that's the number I'm tracking to, so that I know that I've applied the filters correctly. So just looking here, we can see that the variance to budget is $23 million, meaning we sold $23 million more than had been expected or required of these business leaders. So now I'm going to start to create some visualization. So here is subregion and actual. And then I'm going to create a bar chart, add data labels, and then sort it. Okay, see this antique area one judgment up here? This is a finance created area. When we think that the sales guys are being too optimistic, we use this area to bring them back down. So we don't need it, so I'm going to take it out. Okay, now I can still use copy and paste here, but it's not nearly so onerous as it was when I first started. So now I'll take out actual and put in variance to budget and then sort it. All right, so I have a challenge. While I'm building out the rest of these visuals, I would like someone, you guys, to think about which country performed the best. So put yourselves in the place. It'll be a conference room. It would be seats for 13 people, the VP in Redmond, and then the 12 country GMs. Which person walked in feeling the proudest? So now copy and paste again. And I'm going to put in quarter, and then change the visualization to cluster column. Okay, this will be take out actual and put in variance to budget, and then pricing level. Okay, copy this one. And then I'm going to bring in product finally. Okay. All right. So in 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, I built out this. And this really is a recreation of a slide that was used in an actual review. So we're all, you guys, I'm the VP. You guys are all country GMs. Who did the best? Sorry? Carthage, I heard Carthage. So Carthage did the best because they had the largest variance to budget, right? They're the second biggest in size, but they had the largest variance to budget. Now, if we were measuring variance to budget percentage, we'd get a different answer. But now we're just looking at variance to budget. So Carthage did the best. And sure enough, the Carthage VP walked in feeling large, like he was the man that day. And all his peers were there. And, you know, they've all worked at Microsoft a long time. They compete against each other. It's a friendly rivalry, but it's absolutely a rivalry. And so he walked in, and he was the man that day. And the VP knew it, so I knew it. And I said, tell me about Carthage. So click on Carthage. Now we're just looking at Carthage data. And a couple things pop out for me immediately. So the first is that this is not sorted the way I want. Okay, so now it's Q1, Q2, 3, and 4. If you look at the overall trend in Q4, it's much bigger than any other quarter. But in Carthage, it was actually smaller than in Q3. Q4 was smaller than in Q3, so that broke the general trend. The second thing that pops out, anyone want to call it? What seems weird, looking at the bottom three graphs? New, right? New business is down. So I made a big deal explaining about new business precisely because I knew this was going to happen, right? New business was down. And so the VP said, tell me about new business. We hit new business and come back up here to variance to budget, and you see that the variance to budget for new business, Carthage was the worst. So in two clicks, the guy that walked in as the king had come way, way down. Right? He'd come way down. And if you think about how different this dynamic is than a standard meeting. So when I was producing those 75-page PowerPoint decks, what would have happened is VP would have said, oh, looking here at this top sheet, and so I come back here. We would have had graphs that look kind of like this. We'd have this top sheet, and the VP would say, I'd like to see Carthage. Which sheet is Carthage? So we'd flip to, you know, sheet 48, and we'd see just Carthage. And he'd say, wow, Carthage, not so good on new. And he'd say, tell me about new business. How did everyone do in new business? And I probably wouldn't have had that sheet. Probably wouldn't have been in that deck. So I would have had to say, let me get back to you in a week, and we'll take a look at it. So there would have been a one-week delay. Here, there's not a one-week delay. And so let me show you, this is my favorite feature of Power View, is that now I can double click, and you see that in Q4, that was the big hit to new business. The big new business hit took place in Q4. And then we can go further and see that Carthage wasn't the only place affected. Carthage was by far the worst, but Byzantium also took it pretty hard in Q4. So we knew we had problems with new business in Q4 in our two biggest areas, Byzantium and Carthage. And two actions were taken from this. One is that kind of the muscle men for the VP went out to Byzantium and Carthage to figure out exactly what had gone on in Q4 and to see if there was a problem that could be rectified then. So we weren't ruining this whole fiscal year that was in front of us, FY13. The second thing was to understand if these two were canaries in the coal mine, and if we had a problem in the rest of Western Europe, which are neighbor and adjacent economies and perhaps subject to some of the same macro influences that were affecting Byzantium and Carthage. So the finance team in Redmond looked at that issue. The two actions taken as a result of 5 minutes of screwing around with data. And it's that dynamism, that quickness, that ability to go deep very, very quickly that makes this technology so powerful. It's why I like it. It also, you know, makes for much different dynamics in a meeting room. Because I mean, the emotions become quite charged. If you're the Carthage guy, you came in hot, you walk out hammered. And you know, it comes out, people can't hide that. But you also get to things much more quickly. You can solve business issues much more quickly. Questions or comments? Okay. So we look at when we're setting our budgets, we look at external data quite a bit, so GDP growth, PC market share growth, although that's much less relevant now than it was 5 years ago, cloud growth, et cetera. So there's really good data, really good publicly available data out there. This data is from the World Bank. And so you can see I can go anywhere in the world, but I've selected Oceania because I'm in New Zealand right now. So here we have all these countries which are included in Oceania. Here is population, democracy index, very jumpy because of kind of the small base, small number of countries, increase in GDP per capita, mobile phones per 100, internet broadband users. So I can just select New Zealand and see broadband users 1.15 million, mobile phones 110. GDP per capita took this dip as a result of recession. Democracy index flat at 10, so 10 is the top of that. World Bank uses a number of different measures to come up with this index. If we go to Australia, you can see that Australia also took a hit in the recession, but it looks like not as severely as New Zealand. Mobile phone users looks, I think, very similar to Australia. I'm sorry, to New Zealand. Yeah, but you guys got there earlier. Nicely done. So this is a great way to compare geographies. My favorite is if we go to Europe, you can see the average mobile phone use is higher than it was here at 135. Hit Russia, and it's 180. Russia is a 180. I think it's all the mafia guys with throwaway phones. That's what that one is. Before I started at Microsoft, I spent 2 years living in Kazakhstan, and I got a master's degree in kind of post-Soviet studies, but I was really focused on export of oil and how that would make Kazakhstan more independent from Russia. And it's amazing now that 20 years after I did that, Russia invaded Ukraine in exactly the same dynamic that I was trying to study. So if we come here to this bubbles region, this is, I think, a very telling use of data. So there are really four axes of data that we're looking at. Vertically is GDP, horizontally is democracy index, population is the size of the circle, and then time is the fourth dimension. So watch what happens from 1981 through 2011. Is Asia, Europe, and North America are all increasing in terms of GDP and democracy index. All right, Asia's pretty flat in terms of democracy index, but we're kind of pegged out here at North America. Oceania is high on democracy, relatively high. But these 3 years were the ones that grew economically, whereas everyone else was flat. GDP was flat. And if you think about strife in the world today, the inequality is emanating from the bottom towards the top. Right? So, you know, all you have to do is read headlines today about the shutdown of train stations in Hungary. That's people coming out of the Levant, out of Africa, into trying to get into Europe. Same thing with the U.S. border, where we're, you know, Trump talks about building a wall, not only from across Mexican border, but across the Canadian border, for crying out loud. Yes, certainly does. Yeah, too many donuts coming across the border. So if we dig in on Europe, so this then relates back to my study of Soviet Union. Let's click and watch over time what happens. So here's Western Europe. This is Eastern Europe. Coming along, Soviet Union starts to come down. Soviet Union breaks up. Everyone rushes out on the democracy index. Western European countries increase in terms of time. No increase from the Eastern European countries in terms of GDP, except for Russia with some oil, right? And this ended in 2011. If we looked at Russia in 2015, they would be well backwards in terms of democracy index. So I really like this. You can tell a great story here using this four-dimensional arrangement. And I use this when I'm talking about how Microsoft services, and particularly consulting, is doing better or worse in terms of selling more cloud. So percentage of Azure, percentage of 365 in terms of our overall portfolio. I can use exactly this structure to display that and compare different areas for how we do it, or look at different products and how we're selling there. So there are all kinds of applications for this view. Questions here? Okay. It's quite easy. So anyone can do it. You can go down and just go to the World Bank website. They have a data section. You can pull down the tables as CSV, as Excel, and then put them into a data cube. My friend Mark Ragera, who I mentioned earlier, hired a technology guy to use their API, and he's pulled down their entire library. So it's a 200 meg file that has all this data updated and constantly updates. So I don't have that technical ability, but it can absolutely be done by, I think, anyone with a modicum of technical knowledge. Yes? Yes.
And Microsoft have done a lot of work and polling through lots of sites, Wikipedia.
Right. That's exactly correct. And in fact, that's what I'm going to show right now. So jumping ahead just a bit. That's all right. So this is one of my favorite demonstrations. So when I present to people at the EBC in Redmond, many times they're from outside the U.S., and many times, particularly they're from Europe, they're worried about crime in the U.S. because they see a lot on TV about how dangerous it is. They see a lot of violent movies, so they think it's just violent and dangerous in the United States. I use this table from Wikipedia to talk to them about that. So this is United States cities by crime rate, and if we go down, we see New Mexico, Albuquerque, population of 553,000, and then different types of crimes, so absolute values of crimes. So I'll take this link, copy it, and then come here to data, new query, from other sources. And I just like to point out how many different data sources we can pull data from. I think Microsoft has really tried to make it as easy as possible to pull data from a really wide variety of sources. And because, you know, since Satya's come on, we've recognized that we need to be a more open platform. And it's absolutely represented just in this list that you see right here. But because I'm not technical, I can't really do much of this. But I certainly can from the web, right? So I get from web and then put in that URL. And then it's going to go back out to the Wikipedia site. It's going to identify which tables are there. And I can get a preview. And there's New Mexico, 553,000. So that's the same data. I'm going to edit it. And I see that this first row is repeated for some reason, but I can just use first row as headers. The other thing that is troublesome is that all of these are left-oriented. What does that mean?
Text
exactly. Okay. So I'm going to change all of them. Change type to decimal number. And then I don't want to look at whole numbers. I want to look at rates. So I'm going to create a couple of formulas Custom column. So the first one will be, let's have assault rates divided by population times 100, and I'll give it a title. Okay, and then one more. Let's have robbery divided by population times 100. Okay, and so these two have shown up, those two custom columns that I just added. Now close and load. And so now if everything works, it comes into Excel. And when it gets green, then it's worked correctly. So now we have this Excel table that I brought down from Wikipedia. It's kind of cool, but it like the data that we got from American Express to look at travel, you can't make a ton out of this. But I can go to Power Map. They call it 3D maps now, but I still call it Power Map. And so we're just going to map this data right away. It's going to identify geographic fields, city and state. We'll go with city. And then I will add assault rate as the field. A flat map, add map labels, themes, and then flatten it out. And so in just a few minutes, I've established where you're most likely to be assaulted in the U.S. So up in Seattle, this gives comfort to the people that are at the EBC. In Seattle, it's quite low. But if they go to California, which is very often the case because they're traveling down there to meet with other companies, they'll go down there. And I'm happy to point out that it's much more dangerous there than in Seattle. Go to the east. Surprisingly to me when I first saw this is that the Midwest is much more dangerous in terms of assault than was the East Coast, except for Miami. Now, some people prefer to be robbed rather than assaulted. And so I like to give them that choice. So let's come back. California offers the best example. So in Oakland, you are less likely to be robbed than assaulted. But if you want to be robbed, you just drive 70 miles to the east, to Stockton, and there your chance of being assaulted is much higher. So Power Map, I think, is, I really like Power Map too. So I showed you the moving bubbles I really like, but this one I really like too, because I think it is such a great way to display data in a readily consumable fashion. So I showed you before that picture of my vineyard, and I got some public data from the Oregon Wine Board to take a look at what happened in the Oregon wine industry. And then in Power Map, I can make a video of it. So I made a video. So this is a video. I put it up on my OneDrive. I can share this out. This is the average number of vineyards in the state of Oregon. This is Yamhill County, where my vineyard is. And you can see this is where the greatest number of vineyards are. Here is planted acres. So density of acres is also highest up there. This goes down along the Coast Range, and then this is the Columbia River. And since I think there are more here that aren't showing up, here's average vineyard size. This is Monroe County. There are only 5 vineyards here. Watch this pop. This was a big guy from California, a big technology guy who bought one 500-acre vineyard. He totally skewed the average. And then this is a look at Pinot Noir, other reds and whites. So this is Yamhill County, and where my vineyard is, it's mostly Pinot Noir. If you come to the south where it's warmer, you can see that other reds, like Cabernet Sauvignon and Shiraz, are predominant there. Now, this is price per ton for Pinot Noir and for Riesling. So it's easy to see why we took out the Riesling and replanted with some Chardonnay. That was a much better white to plant than Riesling. Now, here's the size of the market. So watch this market growing over time. Watch that. Look at that. It's amazing. Yeah, I still couldn't make any money at it, but it's amazing how much the market grew over time. Okay, so you learned a little bit about the Oregon wine industry there. So I talked a little bit about, when I did the sales dashboard, I showed you the cube, and this was all on my hard drive, so in memory. One of the cool things about learning this technology for me is that I can create my own data cubes, and I now have the ability to go to IT and have a conversation with them that makes sense for IT people. So before, I would describe the type of analytics I would want to do, and there was just no comprehension, very little comprehension of what I wanted. But if I create this cube in memory, if I create this cube in Excel on my hard drive and I take it to someone in IT, I had this map for them, right? So they'll know, where can they get data? How should they join the data? But I want them to maintain it, because I don't want to maintain data. It's not interesting to me. And I'm not as good at it as they are. And I can't scale it the way they can. So I want to take my creation, take it to IT, and have them create it, have them build out the model. And so this is what we're doing, is IT now manages these creations, but they come from finance. And the best example that I can show you is this one. So this is called Enterprise Month Services Finance Reporting, and this is all on a big cube. So we have this big, gigantic cube. IT manages it, and it looks like... No, not that one, sorry. Okay, so it looks like this, and then I show you the field list, and it's been pre-populated with everything I need to manage my business within services. So it's maintained by IT. It's during monthly close. It's refreshed 4 times a day. Every 6 hours, it's refreshed, but they're maintaining it up on that SharePoint site that I showed you. And then they have all these standard views that I can use. So geos by sub, clusters, new work sold, which is our consulting sales, et cetera. And this is great because it means no longer do I have to go out and build these pivot tables, right? It's fantastically easy what I have to do. What I don't like about this is they don't have great visuals. But I found out really not too long ago, just 2 months ago, that I can directly go against that cube and get my own data. So I'm going to show you this. It's pretty simple stuff, but I just want to show you how it's done. Okay, so a blank workbook, data from recent sources, ESBI Analytics Connect. And again, I'm connecting back to Redmond, so it can take a bit of time. So here's EMR. Come on. Also, at the EBC, sometimes it can take forever. And I think it's just to test the nerve of the presenter. Can you keep your cool when things are going your way? And it looks like this time it's not.
While you're waiting, do you mind a question?
Sure, I'd love one. That would help. Yep.
I find that our traditional BI people who do things with crystal reports, business objects, and who have created the initial data warehouse that I now want to access, they say, who are you?
Right.
You can't have my data.
Yeah.
Well, you're duplicating what we've already done. But I wouldn't be. I would come from a completely different angle. How do I pull these people over to my side?
Kick them in the ass? it's tough because, I mean, that's a cultural and behavioral question in part. And so it means working with leadership of both teams to get a joint understanding of how data should and will be used by individuals. And it is a constant conversation. But I think, you have to demonstrate that you will use the data in a responsible manner, but also demonstrate that, in fact, you will differentiate the output. And come up with a different product than what is envisioned and be able to demonstrate the business value of that. Does that help at all?
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Let's see if we did it. Okay, we got it. Okay, so I can just select a scenario, geography, area and sales location, and then fiscal period, fiscal month alt name, and then get some measures. So we will get Premier Core Build, so this is support, and then New Work Sold, And then I'm going to edit it. Okay, and I only need a few of these scenarios. Actual budget, prior to. Replace the null values, et cetera. And so I'm not going to go all the way through it, but let me close and load it. And what this will come out is this same table with this query saved. So I've done all this work, and then I have my own more completed one. So these are all my dimension tables. Hang on, let me close out this other one. So these are all my dimension tables, and then here are the tables that I pulled down. And let me see if I can get into Power Pivot, just to show you my cube. I like to show people them just because I'm so proud that I can do it. I show it to my kids all the time, and they just don't care. But here is, so you can see that this one is much more complex than the simple one that I showed you earlier. And then I've then created an analytic in Power View. So here are Power View in Excel. And this has very similar analytics to what we've seen before. So CSA build, Newark sold, and PCB. I can click here, and then we're just going to isolate the Newark sold performance. And just see these numbers here. So then I've taken this, and I've also done it in, so this is Power BI Desktop. This was released just a month and a half ago, and this is free. You just download this, and this is free. So to me, it's incredible. You get this much power free. And you can bring in data sources from anywhere. So here is another look at my data cube, and this one's organized a little better. So here are my data tables. And then my dimension tables are all down around here. And then it's much easier to switch compared to Excel. It's much easier to switch between the manage view, the data table view, and the visualization view. But it has the same functionality to it.
It's the same stuff you're showing that you do in Excel. You can do in Power BI.
Right. This is Power BI Desktop. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the stuff you showed before where you're using Excel.
Right.
You can do that with Power BI. Right?
Exactly. And so here I have sales, revenue, COGS, delivery margin, and then P&L. And so I have all these views. This is sufficient. I didn't take everything off EMR, but I took enough to have a great review with the VP of services. And I can sit down with him. I can send this to him, and he can refresh himself. And every month, he just refreshes, gets an update. Right, so I'm not recreating PowerPoint decks anymore. He sees this live. And then I can take it to here, so dashboards, I can create a dashboard. We'll just call it EMR. And then I need to get data. So I'm going to come down to files. And again, here are all the different ways you can get data. But I'm going to get it a local file. Let's get, okay. And so now, I could have taken Excel, but I got instead my Power BI desktop file, and it's going to bring that up. Could take a little while. I hope it doesn't. Okay, so here it is. And you can see these are the same tables that I had down here. If I like a graph, so let's go to the sales table. Let's say I like this sales variance to budget. I'll just take it and pin it. And then we can come back to the dashboard and see it's pinned to the dashboard. So then if I want to bring something else in, let's go now to the COGS. Let's say I like that one. I'll bring that up. And then come back, and it's here. And so I can take it and rearrange it, which means that I can build a dashboard in 5 minutes. On Power BI and share it with people all around the world, and they just get it through their browser. Right? I love this. It is so cool. When I first came back from Germany, I there was a new VP been hired externally, and I had all these new skills using data that I wanted to share with him. And I thought I would bond through data with this VP, He just didn't care, right? He did not care. I would send him all these great Power View. He didn't even want to learn how to click. It just bummed me out. But I was able to construct a dashboard for him, and he'd love to look at the dashboard updated every day. So I finally found a way to get him excited about it. Have you guys seen Q&A before? Let me show you Q&A. So I'm running out of time, which is why I'm kind of hurrying a bit. But Q&A, I think, is really cool. So you put data up on a site, and you can ask questions. You can type in questions about that data. They're working on being able just to use Cortana in the Cortana Analytics Suite just to ask a question verbally. But let me pick one. GDP in France is a line chart. Sometimes it takes a while here. Add by year. I tested this in my hotel room this morning, and it worked. The other thing I taught this non-data VP guy was how to do Q&A, and he also liked Q&A. Okay, it looks like it's going to come. There it is. Okay, so GDP in France as a line chart. And then we can say, and this is kind of fun. So I present to French people a fair amount, and to Germans. So I present to French people, and I say, what country should I compare you to? And they would say, it's the Germans. So you type in, and Germans. And come on. Oh, I said France and Germans. That doesn't work. France and Germany. There we go. So they're always depressed. The French are always depressed. shit. So if we type in new, right, New Zealand, you see New Zealand. So if you ask Kiwis, of course they're going to say Aussies, and it's just not a good answer, so maybe I shouldn't do it. So, and Australia by year's line chart. So, but maybe per capita is better, so let's try that. GDP per capita, and that's better, right? There was almost parity right there. So it is better. And then the one that I like is electricity production in China. Okay, so there's China electricity production. Just as I was fascinated with the Soviet Union, I'm fascinated with China because it is so different than the U.S., and yet the velocity there is incredible. And so I'm just fascinated by it. My wife is from Singapore. I met her at business school in the U.S., so she's Chinese from Singapore. And she and I both had this fascination with China, and we studied it a lot. So here's China, and I thought, yeah, China's really growing electricity production, but the U.S., we're still going to be making more than China. So then I type in, and United States. Wow. Boom. China just passes. It was incredible to me to see that. And when I first presented it, they keep changing how this is viewed. So when I first presented it, it was cut off around, say right there, 1995. So I presented this, and I was able to say, yeah, China has not passed the U.S., but I was presenting to Germans. And so they were so detail-oriented. The guy said, no, I think you must slide to the right. So then I slid to the right, and then I got out to 2010, and China had passed us. But Q&A, it's really cool. And because I'm so close to this, I see on a daily basis, you know, how the product groups are changing this stuff over time. I mean, just day by day, there are changes that I notice. And I have, you know, I'll speak very honestly, I have frustrations with a lot of stuff here. So for instance, let me, in Power BI, if I click in here, I can choose all these graphs here. There are all different kinds of graph choices. And so let me come to sales. So I can make this just a bar chart. And it's just as easy to click into this chart, right? And it's really cool to be able to do that. I can't do the same thing in Power View because they don't have the same chart choices in Power View and Excel. And it's incredibly frustrating to me that there's this divergence. It's just silly. And so I have to have faith that they're going to bring them back and converge again. And I also send mail about 3 times a week. Tell them how they need to make it better. So anyway, that's my presentation on how I use BI.